Welcome to the Upper Room Discourse. I'm Felipe Marin.
And I'm Dakota Childress. Stay tuned for our discussions on scripture, doctrine, music, and anything else.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Upper Room Discourse.
Yeah. Who knows what week it is? Who knows what episode this is?
It's week 12.
Week 12. I was about to say, because we surely don't keep up with that. But week 12, we have one, maybe two more episodes left.
Yeah, next week's actually our final episode of the series.
Yeah.
Because this has kind of been a long series. I guess this is, what, episode 11 of the series?
Thought you just said it was 12.
Well, it's 12 episode overall.
Oh, yeah.
For 12 episode for the season.
Yeah, because we had the Forrest Frank kind of filler episode at the beginning. So, yeah, this would be episode 11.
Yeah, I believe so. The only reason I know that was because I just recently went through all the episodes.
And looked at them again.
Yeah, to kind of like figure out where we were and where we were going and all that. You know, and it's funny. You know, we started the whole season with like, here's an artist that consider themselves Christians, and now they're no longer Christian. Like, they've produced Christian music, argue that they're not Christians.
Right.
This last kind of two episodes, these are kind of like, I don't want to be like Christian-aligned artists, but these are two secular artists, but that have Christian roots.
Yeah, I think that's the better way of putting it, is Christian roots.
Yeah. Definitely not Christian. Definitely never really put themselves out there as a Christian.
Yeah, I would hope not, because
yeah, it's a heavy yikes if they did.
At least, I mean, I know more. I say I know more. At least I listen to the person we're going to talk about next week. I listen to more of their music. Actually, everybody knows who they are.
Yeah.
Person we're talking about this week, I hadn't even heard of them until Felipe brought them up way before we ever started this season.
Yeah, much lesser known artist, but she's actually, at least recently, has really grown more in the mainstream as opposed to a couple of years ago.
Right. And so who are we talking about today, Felipe?
Today, our artist that we're looking at today is Lucy Dacus, which I believe that is the pronunciation of her last name.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So we'll just go with that for the remainder of this episode.
Yeah.
Until somebody's like, no, that's not how you say it. This is how you say it.
Just kidding. Little background. This is an artist. She actually originated from Richmond, Virginia, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
Is where she kind of started. Three albums, part of a band. Now, you may not know the name Lucy Dacus that much, but most people probably would know the name Boy Genius, because they're a very popular alternative rock band, current. They actually won a couple, I think three Grammys this past year.
Three Grammys is a lot.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the band name Boy Genius sounds familiar, but I don't know. They're, once you hit like the 2000s, like any 2000s music, I'm just kind of like, I only know the band by maybe one song that they play, because to me, they're just all one hit wonders.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my, that's my take on 2000s music.
No, that's totally fair. But yeah, this is like a, they're like a current alternative rock. I think they won like alternative rock album of the year or something for their album, The Record. Yeah,
it's pretty,
I think,
impressive.
It was like that. They also won like a song of the year thing too within the genre. So they're obviously very popular, very well known.
Yeah. And so we're going to be talking about
one of the specific artists of the band, Lucy Dacus.
Yeah, Lucy Dacus. And she is specifically non-Christian.
Yes.
Atheist.
I don't know if she's gone as far as to say atheist. I think...
heretic. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, honestly, yeah, probably. I guess a little bit of history about, you know, who she is, where she is. Obviously, she grew up as a Christian. And some of the songs are, I think, well, really just one of the songs that we're going to do a deep dive with really talks about that, how she grew up as a Christian.
Right.
But definitely by the time her music career kind of hit, she definitely did not consider herself like a traditional Christian. And that's, I believe that's the word she gave in an interview. She's like, yeah, I'm a Christian, but not like in the traditional sense, which
already a lot of problems there.
Yeah. Take that with what you will.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of where she started. You know, I would definitely say very like cultural Christian, very much like, and, you know, air quotes, but a good person, you know, which were one of the songs actually talks a little bit about that. She has a couple lines about that. This idea of being a, you know, quote unquote, good person, because we know there's no such thing according to Romans. You know, there is no good person, no one that does good, you know, and kind of from there, I would almost argue that she's completely stepped away now and would say she's not religious at all. And in fact, she's actually, I believe, considers herself as a lesbian and is a big advocate for like trans rights and all those kinds of things like that, basically, which you see that a lot in her third album, which I think that came out in 2022, I think.
Right. And I was going to say, after reading through a few of the songs that you had sent me, you could definitely see the progressive is kind of an ironic word.
Yeah.
The progression, from having Christian roots and having some draw to that, some link to that, to eventually completely, destroying all ties to that and embracing worldly culture, embracing whatever this world says is truth. And it's kind of a good segue into, not that we're going to talk about the book yet, but I mean, I guess we could have done Proverbs 2 out of, you know, two times this season, but we're doing a closely aligned book, Ecclesiastes, we're looking at, but we can get into Ecclesiastes later.
Yeah, Ecclesiastes is like the cousin. It's cousin, the better way to put it. Because it's not like it's very similar to Proverbs, but at the same time, it's like different, very different.
Yeah. It's like if Proverbs is one side of the street, then Ecclesiastes is the other side of the street.
It's like that neighborhood where it's like all the houses are like pink, and then there's one house that's black.
I wouldn't say Ecclesiastes is like that, but I mean, it's got a lot more.
I mean, it's got a different vibe.
Yeah. Even though it still deals with a lot of the same,
same stuff.
Yeah. Like wisdom, foolishness. But it's more like, yeah, everything's just vanity. Everything's futile.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what brings me to the connection between Ecclesiastes and Lucy Dacus is that, it's more of the worldliness and, when I was reading through some of her songs, and what I hate is when artists do this. I was telling Felipe this before, and what I hate is when artists just start saying a whole bunch of random mess in their songs, thinking that it sounds good, and really there's no meaning behind it whatsoever. Like, you're just putting a whole bunch of words together that sound good to make a flow and a rhythm, and it's just complete and utter nonsense. And I feel like that's what Lucy Dacus eventually became, is a whole bunch of nonsense in her writing. Mm-hmm. And you can definitely see that if you really just... And this is coming from somebody who... I didn't turn on any of the music. I didn't play one single song. I just read the words.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so... And there's a different vibe you get when you're...
With each album, you definitely get a different vibe.
Yeah. And not even that, with just... When you take a song and you don't listen to it at all, and you just sit there and you read the lyrics with no music or anything, it takes on a different vibe because you don't have all the music influencing what you're thinking and feeling. And I feel like the words come out a lot more, and the meaning really shows. But that was kind of my problem, was there was no real meaning in anything she was saying. There was a lack of depth. There was, and you could see the worldly mindset behind it all, and just how far into the world she is and has gone away from any Christian roots and values.
Yeah, I think you definitely see that progression, you know, because when you look at her first album, you know, some of her songs have a very clear theme and a very clear message that you can kind of see.
Mm-hmm.
But you are right, you know, and it's something that I don't want to be like it's this genre that does it, you know, the whole like indie rock, alternative rock genre. Because there's such a huge emphasis on the music when it comes to rock music that sometimes the lyrics, like they just write complicated lyrics just to write complicated lyrics, which is funny because I feel like that's how some of Ecclesiastes reads.
It's complicated.
Yeah. It's like, why do you have to like write it so complicated and make it so complicated instead of just, you know, saying it simply? You know, and I think the reason I say that is because, you know, which we'll talk about Ecclesiastes later, but I'm like, I almost want to tell you guys, like, read some verses out of Ecclesiastes and try to be like, how do they connect together? Because sometimes I feel like he just pulls out this random thing out of nowhere. And it's like, did he like, is this like something random out of nowhere? This like have bearing within the rest of the context, which obviously it does, but like, you know what I mean, right? Do you have one of those examples like at the ready?
I'm trying to look for one, and it's harder than you think, because when you start looking at some of these, like while you were saying that, I got to chapter 11, just kind of skimming through.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't read this before, but verse 1 says, cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. And it's kind of, at first it's like, what the heck does that mean?
Yeah.
And then you start wondering, like, if I actually threw some bread on on water, is it going to float? I don't know. I haven't tried that yet.
I think bread does float.
And see, that's what I think too, but I don't know. I haven't experimented yet. And Solomon, who wrote Ecclesiastes, was a pretty wise man. So I would suspect that at some time he threw some bread on a river or something on a lake and came back a couple of days later and it was still floating there. I don't know.
I think a great example is in chapter 10. You know, starting in verse 8, he says, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, why is a serpent just hanging out on a wall?
Yeah. You know? And then he's like, he who quarries stone is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. But then you're like, is there any connection there?
Yeah.
You know, and obviously there has to be, because you get to verse 11, and it says, if the serpent bites before it's charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. So you're like, he's still talking about the serpent. You know, so it's like, and I think that's where it gets like, there is complexity to it.
Yes, there
is. It's not simple.
Mm-mm. I think there are some definitely simple statements.
Mm-hmm.
And let's find one.
Oh, in chapter 11, that same one, right after that one where it says about cast your bread upon waters.
Yeah.
It also says, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. It's like, yes.
Yeah, all right.
That is what happens when the clouds are full. They empty themselves. And then he says, if a tree falls to the south or to the north, where it falls, that's where it will be. It's like, what does that have to do with casting your bread upon waters?
All right.
And I think you can kind of see the complexity there. The like, you know what I mean? Like the, I don't know what it is. Tension's not the right word, but complexity.
It's kind of like, not dichotomy. I want to say juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Like a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what Ecclesiastes tries to get. One of my favorites, and then we can get back to Lucy Dacus right quick, but I think it does a good job of being more simple.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Ecclesiastes 4 and then verses 9 and 10, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion, but woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. So there are some verses in Ecclesiastes, as we can see with this one as one example, where things are pretty simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easier to be lifted up, and it's easier to have better work and better reward when there's more people doing the work, you know, when you have help. And I think that's also teaching that we can't just go through life on our own and doing things on our own. We, as believers, we hear that, you know, no man's an island.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's a lone wolf. You know, you can't just keep going throughout life as a believer on your own, expecting to make it, because this is a warning. And this is specifically to people of God. But I think that's also a general truth to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the consequence of that.
Yeah.
You know, if you fall, if something happens and you're alone, well, how are you going to get up? You know, let's say you're alone and, you know, in this time, maybe you're working out in the fields, and an ox or a bull just runs over you and you break both your legs and nobody's around. Well, you're stuck and nobody's going to come help you. Nobody's going to see you. But you know, if there's somebody out there who is helping you in the fields and they see that happen, well, they can take you to safety or something like that. So that's kind of where my mind goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's a warning for those who would rather live life alone and as a loner and doing things by themselves than, being somebody who enjoys companionship and others.
Yeah. And the connection here, which this is going to be the first song I wanted to look at, Troublemaker Doppelganger, which is a strong connection with Ecclesiastes, which this might be why I suggested Ecclesiastes for this week.
Right.
you know, a big, maybe not theme is the right word, but kind of like a big reoccurring thought you see in the book of Ecclesiastes is this idea of I've seen this evil under the sun.
Right.
You know, basically, you know, something there's is evil that exists, mm-hmm. which as Christians, we understand, we call that sin, obviously. I mean, yes, you know, Satan is there and there's evil there, but for the most part, when all this evil that happens is really just a result of sin, maybe not a direct result,
right?
But evil, you know, kind of exists within humanity because of the fall, essentially. That's like the big cause. And now we have all this evil. But her song Troublemaker Doppelganger, which by the way, it's off her first album, which I think is her best album. Bless you.
Thank you.
At least when it comes to just the lyric writing and the like really cool themes and stuff, I think her first album does a great job with it. But Troublemaker Doppelganger, the whole idea of the song is, you know, basically like there's kind of like this evil that exists. You know, the chorus goes, I want to live in a world where I can keep my doors wide open, but who knows what get in and what get out.
Right.
You know, one of these nights I'll sleep with the windows down, but not until that creature's in the pound. Basically talking about there's this creature that's roaming out there, you know, which I guess you can kind of draw the conclusion of like this idea of Satan, which again shows the elementary faith there, you know, because Satan is not really the source of evil. You know, a lot of that evil actually comes from within. But she has those questions. She's like, you know, when did my folks, my parents, when did they stop covering my eyes? Did my brother teach me about jealousy? Did my sister teach me about vanity? You know, where did it come from?
Right.
You know, and that's the beauty of the song Troublemaker Doppelganger. And again, I see the strong connection with Ecclesiastes because he talks about it so much. Solomon does, which by the way, Ecclesiastes, no known author. Solomon makes the most sense. If he didn't write it, these are at least his recorded words,
right?
Just by context within. You know, but that's what he says over and over again. He said, I saw this vanity, this evil under the sun, you know, and that's why I like Troublemaker Doppelganger a lot. And the next song that I want to pull up, Strange Torpedo, this might be my favorite song by her. Because this song is all about somebody that's gone out of control. That's why they're a torpedo. You know, somebody who's basically gone into addiction or gone into drugs, you know, and I don't know if you have those lyrics up. You probably don't.
I don't.
What hits really hard is the bridge on that song. I thought you'd hit rock bottom, but I'm starting to think that it doesn't exist because you've been falling for so long and you haven't hit anything solid yet. You know, and I think anyone that's been around someone with addictions and stuff like that, I think they really resonate with these lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, and the hard part is that there is a rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And it's when you get there, right? You hit rock bottom once, I mean, I guess the first one would be once you start the addiction, mm-hmm. you know, in a sense. And then, you know, there's a rock bottom somewhere between when you start the addiction and when you die. Because sometimes people never get out of addiction and it does end up in their death, depending on what it is, right? Some addictions people do come clean from because they hit a point where they realize that what they're doing is not good for them. And that's usually because something tragic happens.
Yeah.
And it causes them to realize whether, you know, that's God and the Holy Spirit working in their life or, it's just something happens anyway. I mean, all things are ordained by God.
Yep.
All things are known by God, what's going to happen. He's sovereign over all. So whether that person becomes safe from that event in the midst of their addiction or not, that's, well, kind of complicated because we want to say that we have some portion and part in our own salvation, but we really don't, except for the believing and trusting in God. All the work is done by God himself. But that's the rock bottom that I think some people will come to as far as salvation. And then I think for others, they might hit that rock bottom and then they just go even further and it ends up in their destruction. And, you know, Ecclesiastes even talks about that. I think, you know, around I say that all the time, but like around chapter 5, getting to really verse 6, you know, verse 16, chapter 5, this is this also is a grievous evil. Exactly as man is born, thus he will die.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's that mean? You know, man is born into sin and he takes the words of Job in a sense, and man is born with nothing. And so he's going to die with nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, we come into this world naked, thus we're going out naked. You know, we're born in sin, and for most people, they're going to die in their sin. Mm-hmm. And that's the tragedy of it.
Yeah. And, you know, with this song, I think we really see the secular perspective, the, you know, worldly worldview, as opposed to approaching this from the biblical worldview. You know, in one of the verses, it says, you know, every time I try to tell you what I think is right, because I think it's wrong, you know, that you're basically sitting around like you're a toy, just sitting in a lost and found. You know, basically talking about like you're not even doing anything, you're not even being productive, you know, but really this idea of like, they're trying to do everything they can to tell them what they think the other person should be doing. The other person doesn't care and doesn't listen,
right.
You know? And I definitely feel like this is something that Christians get wrong, you know, because a lot of times we blame people for basically being who they are. You know, we understand that someone that's lost, they're considered dead, and we get upset when they act like a dead person acts. You know, we shouldn't get angry or upset when a lost person acts like a lost person, because they're a lost person, you know. Yeah. And I can almost see kind of that perspective kind of sneak its way on in, if that makes sense. You know, basically thinking like, you should be better, you should do better, but you're not. And now there's this tension, and I don't know what's going to happen. Something one day is going to give, and one day something's going to explode. You know, you're basically a torpedo on the loose. One day it's going to explode, you know, and that's something that we need to be careful of. You know, don't expect a lost person not to act like a lost person.
Right. Yeah. And that's a lot of the tension that you see in, I'd say, Ecclesiastes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a lot. There is quite a bit of tension that you see in Ecclesiastes between the writer, we'll mm-hmm. just say Solomon, wanting to explain to his sons that, you know, work is good
mm-hmm.
and work is fine, but that work at the same time is vanity, and that you're just striving after nothing mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you're going to die.
Yeah.
I think he brings up the man who's all by himself, he's alone and he's working instead of just enjoying what little bit of life he has. Mm-hmm. And it's not even just work, but you know, the fools, they go out here and just talk, they scream and yell, and in their hearts, they think they're wise. And so there's a lot of that tension there. There is a lot of this tension about death, and the living. And I think what we see most happening in Ecclesiastes is this, it revolves around life. Mm. So I think that's a good place to start. And it's the whole aspect of what's really important in life and what we should really be focusing on and moving towards and where our heart should be. And that goes back to what you were talking about with non-believers, mm-hmm. you know, people who are set against God, people who God has set his heart against. Right? Because man and God are at war with each other. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be cognizant of that as believers and intellectually honest, that man, who is still in his sin, and God are enemies. Mm-hmm. And we have to understand that that's part of what we're talking about here in Ecclesiastes. And I kind of lost my train of thought after that, but It's very simple in a sense, because they are going to do what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. They are just going to be fools. They are just going to make war against God. And that's what they're going to do. And we're going to do what we do. We're going to honor God mm-hmm. and we're going to glorify God. And God is going to give us the goodness and the reward from that. And so just both parties get their reward, mm-hmm. right? We see that the believers, those who follow and trust in God, they get their reward in eternity that has to do with God, because that's where they placed it. That's what they've worked towards. Mm-hmm. And then, but they still die at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right. Just like the faithless person the unbeliever. Ironic, right? But just like the unbeliever, they die as well. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, their reward and their work is actually worthless. And so we don't sit here and judge them mm-hmm. because what they're already doing is worthless. But, and at the same time, there's this tension because it's like, okay, we're to be wise. We're to be understanding and pursuing after God. And do we go out here and give our wisdom to the fool? And the quick answer is, well, yeah, we should, because that's what the gospel is all about, us doing, is going and making disciples. We have that command. But, you know, we also realize that if a person is wanting to continually deny, mm-hmm. continually push back, then there comes a time when we have to just drop it, move on, and let them be to their destruction.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, I mean, talking about Lucy Dacus, that's where I would say she is in her walk.
Yeah, I would say so too. You know,
she is on the road to destruction. Mm-hmm. And that's her work. That's her toil. Her labor is actually in vain. And everything she does, all this questioning she does, she can question for all eternity. Mm-hmm. And the answers are all here. They're in God's word about what she needs. And it's salvation through the blood of Jesus Christ. And yet, her denial of that because of whatever has happened in her life is what's brought her here. And I mean, I can't really speak for her, but you can see from the evidence in some of her songs that mm-hmm. something has happened in her life for her to go from saying, I have some belief in God mm-hmm. and Jesus, to being a full-blown LGBT advocate, lesbian,
yeah.
having nothing to do with God. I'd really say atheist, you know, heretic. Heretic's not even a good word, because that means, you know, at some point they were involved with church or whatever, mm-hmm. but I guess along that route, and the reward is hell for that and for the person who denies God. Mm-hmm. And, but there is a need to still go out and be wise and to minister the gospel to her.
Yeah. And I think we really want to emphasize, remember that this is the eternal reward that we're talking about, because in Ecclesiastes, you know, he actually talks about it, you know, but good things happen to bad people.
Yeah.
And bad things happen to good people.
Sometimes.
You know, and he talks about it, how he witnessed it, and he calls it an evil, because obviously it should be an evil, you know. And, you know, I'm always reminded of this idea of karma. You know, people always say that if you do bad things will happen to you. If you do good things will happen to you. And there is some truth in that, because that happens. You know, but that's not the entire truth, you know, and really it's just this idea of coming to a conclusion of, we just don't know, you know, God is who God is. And the things that happen to people are the things that happen to people, and we don't have any control over it.
Yeah.
You know, we should remember that, you know, because I feel like a lot of people that are not strong, and which I think this is where the meat of the conversation goes, this idea of faith and what faith means and what it looks like. You know, it's not your parents' faith, but a personal faith that you're going to have yourself. But we need to remember that. I'm trying to think where my train of thought was. I did the same thing as you did.
You lost it, didn't you?
It's, to be fair, I haven't slept that much, and it's kind of a rainy day and all that. That's besides the point.
No, but no, it's a hard topic, mm-hmm. because trying to relate somebody who's an unbeliever to something of the gospel,
it's not easy.
It really isn't easy. And Ecclesiastes is already a hard book. Mm-hmm. Some of the songs that she has written are just, like I said earlier, complete nonsense.
Yeah.
Whereas, and it stays as nonsense. And so that's what makes it hard. But then you have Ecclesiastes, mm-hmm. which sounds like nonsense sometimes, but is full of truth, and it is truth.
Yeah.
But I think that's just what makes it hard.
Yeah. Moving into this conversation of like this idea of faith, you know, I feel like she never really had her own personal faith.
Right.
You know, and I think you definitely see that in a lot of her songs. I think we definitely, I'm trying to think where we start with this. Her song Trust, that's one of those nonsense songs.
Yeah.
I'm going to own up to it, because it is. Really, I think the main focus of this is the music and just like some good lines, basically. Because she does drop the good line, like, you know, if I trust in something else, then I don't need to trust myself.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned a lot since I began, but I think I was wiser then. And that's kind of the tension that I wanted to get to, this idea of faith. You know, basically she was saying, I think it was wiser then before I even knew all of this stuff, when my faith was blind. And, you know, blind faith is something that a lot of people talk about. And a lot of people are like, you know, to believe in something, you don't have to see it. You know, faith, you just believe. Faith isn't about evidence or anything like that. You know, but I think we understand that faith actually is based on evidence, because that deepens faith. You know, that's a very strong faith, is a faith based in evidence, as opposed to a blind faith that is based on nothing at all. You know, I'm not saying that it's good or bad. That's not the conversation. The conversation isn't good or bad. The conversation is strong and weak.
Right.
And a blind faith is very shakable. And I think that's where her faith started. You know, which if we jump to her song Pillar of Truth, which this is actually, she wrote this about her grandmother that was a very devout believer. I think that song right there kind of demonstrates and shows us that, you know, basically she looked at her grandmother as that, you know, pillar of truth, and now she's gone and that truth isn't there. And I think a lot of her faith probably was based off of that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's such a problem
mm-hmm.
with a lot of this generation, is there's this idea that, oh, somebody else in my family is saved, or somebody else I know is saved. I'm really good friends with them, or they're my parents, or they're my grandparents. And so I'm blood related to them, or I'm really close to them.
Yeah.
And I'm good, because that's how close I am to them. They're close to Jesus. That's cool. And I'm close to the person who's close to Jesus. So I'm good. Like, no, right? That's not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
So each person is their own faith. And there's a stark contrast between Lucy and Solomon
mm-hmm.
when they view the world, right? We see Solomon. We understand Solomon was very wise.
Yes.
And we understand that when he's writing this, he's probably older in years, talking to his sons who are young men, probably. I don't know. Just speculating here. But it's like the State Farm?
Mm-hmm.
No. Man, what is the insurance company? But they always say, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Farmers insurance?
Farmers insurance, something like that. I don't know who it is at this point, but maybe Farmers. So, but that's how I see Solomon. He's like, yeah, I know a thing or two because I've seen a thing or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe in God. We understand what happened to Solomon later on with, you know, he's got all them concubines and all his wives, and he strayed from God. Still kind of makes you wonder if we're going to see him in heaven or not. But that's another topic for another day. But when Solomon looks at the world, he sees all the evil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He sees all the good as well. He sees the wisdom and the foolishness. And because he has wisdom, right? And his wisdom has only grown over the years.
Yeah.
And he sees righteousness. He sees what good striving looks like. He sees what bad striving looks like. And yet, he somehow comes to the conclusion that either way you go about it, it's all vain.
Yeah.
Because it's going to vanish. And in a sense, that is true. But what he's getting at, I think, is the truth that, you know, if you're not going to live in wisdom, and if you're not going to set your mind rightly on God, then the way you're going to look at the world is the way that Lucy looks at it,
mm-hmm.
with this sense that, oh, everything is evil. There's nothing to trust in. You can't even trust in yourself. Kind of what Nietzsche, if you know who Nietzsche is, he's a philosopher from like the early 1900s. And basically his whole idea was nihilism.
Mm-hmm.
That's where kind of where we get the word annihilation from.
Yeah.
So, you know, something from, or nothing from, something from nothing. Everything goes back to nothing. This whole idea of nothingness. That's kind of where I see her going.
Mm-hmm.
Is this whole idea of nothingness, this whole idea of you can't trust anything, can't trust anybody, can't trust yourself, nothing really matters. And that's a foolish
yes.
way of looking at it, because there is something that matters. Your life actually does matter, and what you do with it does matter, because there is more than just nothing after we die. There's heaven and hell.
Mm-hmm.
And there is more to life, to this life, than just working and toiling and just going around drinking, eating, being merry, and doing random things because, you know, we know we're going to die one day, so let's just enjoy it while we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two sides of that coin. And Solomon is one side. And then everybody who has the mindset of Lucy Dacus is the other side. So we can either have wisdom and see life for what it is, that there is good and bad, that good happens to bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Bad also happens to bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Good happens to good people and bad happens to good people. Right. And we know the verse that the rain falls on the righteous and unrighteous just the same. That's a very bad paraphrase probably, but we understand that the rain is going to fall on everybody, no matter who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just the way that we should really look at life, and not only life, but our situations. And so you can either see that everything happening in your life and everything you do is for a reason and is guiding you somewhere. Like we just talked about this this past Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
There's a road that leads to destruction, and it's wide. It looks good, and it's supposed to look good because that's how the devil wants it to look. And it's going to be filled with pleasures. It's also going to be filled with doubting. But that doubting is going to look like, oh, well, that person's bad. I'm not going to be like that person.
Mm-hmm.
But you're innately bad anyways. You're innately sinful and a sinner and an enemy of God. But Satan's going to do everything he can to make that way look good. And it ultimately leads to destruction and hell.
Yeah. And, you know, that relativeness is a dangerous thing. You know, and I think that's I really just comes down to lack of discipleship, you know, 100%, you know, lack of, you know, deep theology, you know. But in one of her lyrics, she writes, I'm just as good as anybody. I'm just as bad as anybody. You know, basically like this relativism, like, you know, I'm not the worst. I'm not the best, but I'm not the worst either. You know, and basically mm-hmm. this whole, like, I'm a good person mentality, which I do think in some of the other songs does come out, this idea of like, I am a good person. I think it was the song, I didn't pull up the lyrics for it, but her song Yours and Mine, where she's basically like, you know, you can take care of you and yours. You can take care of that. I'll take care of me and mine.
Right.
Is basically the kind of idea of the song. But I think that's where those lyrics come from. I'm just as good and I'm just as bad, you know, and that whole relative stuff is just, it's dangerous. You know, I really think that's where we get to, well, I mean, obviously we get to the non-believer. Basically where she's like saying like, you know, I'm not a believer anymore. I'm not a believer really. I'm leaving and I'm going to go try to find basically this whole mentality of trying to find the truth when the truth is absolute and the truth has never changed. And it's been here the whole time. You know, we can jump to the song VBS. You know, this almost feels like a good testimony of really where she started, you know, walking away from the faith. Or where you can see her faith didn't really exist. You know, it talked about how in the summer of 07, I was sure I'd go to heaven. You know, and the fact of like, she was told that she could be a leader and do all this stuff, you know.
Right.
But then she talked about basically meeting this guy. And which ironic because at the time she was into guys. She's into girls now. But basically about like this guy that was, you know, basically the bad boy. And really her mentality was like, you know, let me help them, you know, let me see what I can do to help him, to show him the truth. And the reality of it is that it actually just made her darker, which is again, the dangerous thing of a shallow faith, you know, a shallow blind faith or a faith based off your parents' faith. You know, when you get challenged by it, it's not going to stand,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're not going to understand. And I mean, at least to the lyric, which is a very powerful lyric, you know, you said I showed you the light, but all I did in the end was make the dark feel darker than before, right. You know, and that's what's going to happen. You know, if you have not seen the light, the dark is only going to get darker. You know, dark gets darker, the less light there is.
Yeah. It's kind of funny you say that because, just a couple of things towards the end of,
mm-hmm.
Towards the end of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, on my word. But the first thing is getting into chapter 11, just talking about the words of a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of his talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness. I think that describes Lucy Dacus. But then what you were just saying about the light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun.
Yeah.
Just wanted to throw that out there because... good truth right there.
No, that's absolutely true. You know, but I mean, you just, again, this is kind of overview with her, but you just see it in the lyrics, this like worldliness and it's just like not understanding of Christianity, you know, in the, this is from her song VBS, in the evening, everybody went to worship and weep, hands above our heads, reaching for God. It's like, that's not really what worship is. That's not why you, your hands are out. You're not reaching, trying to get to God.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, as a, yeah. And when you look back, I mean, as a child, you don't have really an understanding of anything.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to have somebody come in and help you to understand things. And, but we see that somebody probably, that probably never happened, or it did, and she just rejected it all. And that's how she still views worship, as some reaching of the hands. And, but it takes a lot of growth to understand what real worship is.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know, I'm like at a loss when it comes to her. You know, I definitely wouldn't like recommend people to go listen to her music, especially not now. I don't really listen to her much now anyways. She has a, I think she would definitely have like a couple of good songs that are like neutral, if that makes sense. Like they're not, they're not really like talking about like Christianity or about like, you know, any like agenda that she's trying to push. It's just like some good, well-written songs. Cause she does have a couple of those, you know, but I'm gonna be honest. I think the only album really worth listening is her first one, because the further, the, you know, the later you get in her albums, the more worldly they become, the more secular they become, you know, and this is something that I hate, but it's, I guess this is kind of a start for what our conversation is going to look like next week. But when artists use Christian terms without knowing what they actually mean,
right?
Because her song Pillar of Truth is full of them, of all these like Christian sounding terms and stuff. But at the same time, like, again, it's like what you said, like, it's just, it turns to nonsense.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I guess another good verse, cause Ecclesiastes is full of good verses. Right. Mm-hmm. But you know, something else, and not just when it comes to, not just when it comes to Lucy Dacus, but any of the artists that we've talked about and any artist that you're struggling with, wanting to listen to, I would say just kind of run it through this verse right here in chapter 7, kind of, but it fits pretty well. Oh no, and I've done lost it. Give me just a second to find it here. Okay, verse 5. It is better to listen to the rebuke of a wise man, not that I'm calling myself wise or that Felipe is calling himself wise, than for one to listen to the song of fools.
Yeah.
And what we see most often is a lot of the songs that we have, well, except for Timothy Brindle, which we did last week.
A lot of secular songs.
A lot of secular songs, and are just foolish.
Yeah.
Whether it's in content or whether it's in, so, you know, what the message of the song is as far as content, you know, what the words are actually saying, like what words are actually being used, or the artists themselves. And we've covered a whole bunch of different ones. Now we're covering non-believing artists who have Christian roots. And so we've looked at a whole bunch of foolishness. And I say the only light that actually was, you know, the Timothy Brindle album, Fault Lines. But that was also dealing with foolishness of somebody who was a close friend of Timothy Brindle.
Yeah.
Shai Lin, who has dabbled in CRT a bit. That was last week's episode. Go check that out. And so we just have to remember, right? What is, not saying that all secular songs shouldn't be listened to, okay? Because there are neutral secular songs.
Yeah.
There are songs that are perfectly fine to listen to, that have no agenda in them, that have no bearing. I wouldn't say really any song has a bearing on your soul, whether you're going to heaven or hell at all. So any song is up to you to listen to and choose to listen to. But run it through that. Is what it's saying foolishness, or is it wisdom? Is there something good to be found, even if it is a secular song? Right? Not saying that it's God approved, right? It's got a stamp of approval on there from the Christian community. But is it something neutral that you can listen to without your conscience as a believer being guilted of? And if not, then it's just foolish. Yeah. And don't listen to it.
And I think we need to be aware of, which again, this all comes down to discipleship. This all comes down to, you know, not having an elementary faith and elementary belief, but I have a much deeper faith and deeper belief that's rooted, you know, but you got to know when it's time to stop listening to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, conscience or conviction, you know, but I think it's just foolishness. You know, that's a good question to ask whenever you come to any song. You know, is this artist, are they only speaking foolishness? You know, or is there some bearing here? You know, with Lucy Dacus, some of her songs do. You know, some of her songs, like, you can see a little bit of truth in there. You know, but then so many of them, they end up being just this, like, foolishness.
Yeah.
It's like, is it worth your time listening to? And for the most part, it's not.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times what you listen to, that comes in, and that's going to affect the way you live your life. You know, whether you believe what they're saying or not, it is going to affect you. You know, there's a reason why we're commanded in Scripture to sing songs to each other. You know, and it's very specific. You know, it says sing psalms, sing hymns, sing spiritual songs. You know, sing it to one another. We understand the object of our worship is God. We don't worship each other. But that doesn't mean that we're not supposed to encourage each other. And one of the ways we do that is through song, because songs are catchy. You know, you want to know why Lucy Dacus has done so well and is so popular is because of her voice and because of the music. You know, the way that her voice is very unique, very iconic. You hear that voice and then you hear some very, you know, because she's written some very vulnerable lyrics before, and people get that connection. You know, we need to be aware of what we're listening to.
Right.
You know, don't just listen to it because it sounds good. You know, don't just listen to it because you might relate to a couple of the lyrics. Look at it as a whole. Is it foolish or is it, you know, wisdom? And I think there's some, like, there's a lot of tension there. You almost come to a point where you're like, do I even want to listen to secular music anymore?
All right.
You understand what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it. But, and that's not the point to say that secular music is bad to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I've already talked about that. But it's just who you listen to, what song you listen to. There are some bands out there who are literal demon worshipers.
Yes.
They are literal Satanists. And I would caution anybody who listens to them, like, to not listen to them, right? But there are artists who aren't, and they might be like Lucy Dacus. They might be like Kanye.
Yeah.
They might be like Hawk Nelson. And maybe they're not devil worshipers. Maybe they're just people who reject God for whatever reason. Still just as bad. And I would caution you, because what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up listening to foolish words. And that's going to become, you know, what you're pouring into your heart and mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be what ends up coming out of your heart and out of your mouth and out of your mind. And so we go back to Philippians 4:8. You know, we put in things that are true, honorable, good. I can't ever remember the rest of that verse. But, and then we also understand that what comes out of the man is what defiles him.
Yes.
And not what goes in. And there's kind of...
You are what you eat.
You are what you eat, yeah. And there's kind of two more verses I wanted to look at right quick from Ecclesiastes, since I'm already turned here. But one is in chapter 7 again. And I discovered more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. And that's just not, and that's not just to do with Lucy Dacus, but that can be applied to any artist, whether male or female. If their heart is snares and nets, no matter what kind of music they're putting out, like, I would say Lauren Daigle is one who is snares and nets.
Yeah.
And it's, and she's just as bad as Lucy Dacus.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
If anything, she might be worse.
Because she claims to be a Christian. Yeah.
Yeah.
But definitely be careful of who you're listening to. And then the last one, although, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, people, sinners are going to do what they're going to do, mm-hmm. and believers are as well. Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God, who fear him openly. And so we just got to remember that, you know, we're the ones who fear God. Believers in Jesus Christ as the Lord and Savior are the ones who fear God, and we just got to keep at it. we have to fear him and revere him and respect and honor him more than we allow culture to interfere with our lives and cause us to maybe be scared of it.
Yeah. You know, so, cause I feel like maybe not have been super clear with it. Cause obviously this is a season of controversy. You know, there's not any like crazy controversy with what we're looking at today.
Right.
But I definitely think it's something important to discuss and talk about, especially leading up to what we're going to be doing next week and what we're going to be talking about, you know, but there's so much in this world that we don't understand.
Right.
You know, there's all this evil that exists and we can see it, you know, and it's, I mean, that's the question of Ecclesiastes. You know, he's like, look at, I've seen all of this stuff that's happened. And at the end of it, I'm like, none of it matters. Yeah. And this is kind of the end of Ecclesiastes, but he's like, you know what the whole purpose of it is? He's like, fear God, keep his commandments.
Yep.
And I mean, it's the verse you said, you know, those that fear God, it will be well for them. Ultimately, you know, we're not going to see it in this life.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, it does happen sometimes. Sometimes, you know, as it should, good things happen to good people, you know, as it should.
Right.
You know, good things happen to those that are righteous. But at the same time, bad things happen to those that are righteous too. And, you know, I really think that's what, again, just to reiterate the dangerousness of a shallow faith, you know, she, all these things happen to her and it just reached the point where she's like, you know, I thought only good things were supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, something that I think a lot that the church has taught recently is this idea of God is good to you. God loves you.
Yeah. Prosperity gospel.
The prosperity gospel. God wants all these good things for you. But, and he does a comparison in Ecclesiastes. He's like, dude, we're just like fish. The fish don't even know when the net's going to get them and the net gets them.
Yeah.
It was what we think we are deserve all these things, but you know, the only thing that we deserve because of our sin is death. And the prosperity gospel, there's a dangerous there. You know, that's where we get to these cultural Christians or people like Lucy Dacus, that they just walk away from the faith because they never had it. You know, if you don't develop that faith and you don't have anything more than just a blind elementary faith based off nothing, you know, you're going to be tested and your faith won't stand and you're just going to walk away because it never existed.
Right. Yeah. And so we have to, believers and non-believers alike, have to be very careful. Watch how you walk. Mm-hmm. And if you're struggling, I mean, we all struggle, you know, in, man, why is something bad in my life happening? As a believer, you're never promised anything good in the first place.
Exactly.
And that's not to, and that sounds bad coming out. I don't mean it in a bad way, but we're not promised that our lives are going to be better just because we're believers in Jesus Christ. In fact, we're promised that we'll suffer even more because of our belief in Jesus Christ, whether that is physical, verbal abuse, whether that is being kicked out of a home, whether that is, you know, seeing the people you love die and pass away and not knowing if they're saved or not. It just kind of depends, you know. Yeah. But we have the one who gives us all comfort through those situations. And Ecclesiastes talks about that. Mm-hmm. Time for everything.
Yeah.
And you can go read time for, you know, death, a time for life.
The most popular section of the book of Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, it really is.
Chapter 3.
Right there at the beginning. But no, we gotta remember who God is and what he's already promised us as believers. And there's no promise to unbelievers except that I guess your life's just going to end in destruction and hell. But there is hope through Christ as Lord and Savior from that death, from that destruction. So we don't discount that. We don't just leave it at the, oh yeah, you're a sinner. You don't believe in God. You're going to hell. No, because we're all offered the same grace, the same mercy from Jesus dying on the cross. It's just the ones who believe in him that will be saved. And that's the message that even us here, you know, talking about on this podcast, I mean, I'm pretty sure we reiterate that every week and we try to as hard as we can, because we don't know if the person on the other side, you, whoever you are, is listening, is saved or not. You could be somebody who is on the lines of, I don't know, let's say Lucy Dacus, who is very much going with the worldly standard, and somehow you just came upon this podcast, and this is the episode you're listening to. Maybe one of the more boring episodes we've done. Probably, I wouldn't say the most boring one. I mean, we've definitely had more boring episodes. Not saying that this one's boring, but it's been good because we're talking about Ecclesiastes. But you might have stumbled on this, and you feel like your life is just in chaos. But there's a God of order. Or you might be like, I don't know, Kanye. We talk about Kanye a lot because he's like the second most well-known artist we'll talk about this season. But you could be like Kanye, who you find some, you start off on the road and you find yourself come into that sense of wanting to know who Christ is, and that you start coming to that sense of salvation, and you get stuck, and then you drift away, and you're probably right before that drifting away. I don't know. Whatever the situation is, I mean, the gospel is for each person to believe it on their own. Mm-hmm. And so it's just on, it's on you.
Yeah. And I think two final things, which hopefully I can remember the first thing. You know how my brain is. Yeah. But the second thing is, you know, with the progression with Lucy Dacus, I think you can see where fame is a dangerous thing for the Christian, or for the Christian aligning, you know, cultural, whatever, you know, because I wouldn't say that she ever started as a Christian ever. But we see that because we see the progression as she gets more worldly. She gets more worldly as she gets more famous. And I think the why I wanted to bring that up is because that's a big segue into what we're going to be looking at next week about what fame does to a person.
Right.
It's very dangerous. You know, who is the hardest person to go to heaven? The rich person.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder for a rich person to go to heaven than for you can interpret it however you want, but for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. I know people have different interpretations from what that means. But at the most basic, like, it's really, really difficult for a rich person to go to heaven because they focus so much on their, you know, their materials. Truth of Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
Those materials don't matter.
I love it.
It's reminded me, I don't know if there's any truth to this. I was, I read about it the other day, but we all know Alexander the Great, which is crazy that we're talking about him two episodes in a row. This is like if I had a nickel, you know what I mean? The whole nickel. Like, but it's weird that it happened twice.
Yeah. Did we really talk about him last week?
Yeah, we mentioned it because we were talking about Daniel.
Oh, yeah, we did.
But I read about that. When Alexander the Great died, he was like, I have three specific things that I want them to do, which is what tradition holds that they did. But he had the best doctors carry his body, because he wanted to show them that even the best doctors can't conquer death.
Right.
He wanted them to, you know, put all of his possessions and his riches on the street as he was being carried out, to show him that you can't take any of it with you. And then he wanted his hand to be like waving out in the wind, because he wanted them to say, like, you come into this world empty handed, you leave this world empty handed.
Right.
You know, which Alexander the Great was a very wise man. Not the wisest.
Not the wisest.
We all know who the wisest man was, Solomon.
Yeah, he wrote two books, three possibly.
But we understand that Alexander the Great studied under whatever his name was, Greek philosophers.
Oh, are you talking about like, I'm not even going to try, so let's skip that.
Like Plato. And Socrates and all of them. You know, that's where Alexander the Great came from, you know, because there was some wisdom. The Greeks were all about wisdom. They're all about wanting to be wise. The Greeks probably had like, they were around when Solomon was around. They were probably like, wow, this is crazy. You know, they'd probably be like, dude, this is a god. It's probably what they would think, because that's what...
It's funny to think about.
I mean, that's how the Greeks were. They were very polytheistic. So maybe they would have come to that point. I was hoping I could have remembered what my first point I wanted to make was.
I don't know. It'd always be like that. You always either remember the first one and forget the second one.
Yeah.
Or forget the first and remember the second
one. I remember the first one now. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
See, that's all it takes. I know we talked a lot of negative things today.
True.
You know... I do think there is some positive. What I really love about Lucy Dacus's music is it shows you what a lost world looks like. And I think as Christians, we forget that perspective, which I think that might be like one of the biggest reasons why you should listen to some secular music, you know, is because it can help show you what the lost world and what their perspective is like.
Right. You don't live in an echo chamber.
Exactly. You know, and it'll, I think it'll help you to be able to reach them. And it's not that I'm trying to say like become like them to reach them, but right. there is some truth there. And Paul writes about that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I became like that person to reach that person.
Yeah.
And we don't become a sinner to reach a sinner. Obviously I think the truth
or
of that
culturally.
Yeah. We see the truth of that in her song VBS, where she's like, I tried to like do what I can to save them. But in the end, it really just made me worse. It's hard to pull someone onto a table
yep.
than it is for them to pull you off of the table.
I was just thinking that same thing.
Yeah. So I think there is some fruit when it comes to listening to secular music. I definitely think she has some good songs that are worth listening to. And I think her first album is phenomenal. And I think it does a good job of showing you a perspective.
Right.
Of, you know, trying to make it in this world or trying to be, you know, find a part in this world and like trying to find the answer and not being able to find it. And really just what the lost world looks like, what a world without hope looks like. And I think you see a lot of that in some of her songs, this lack of hope.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. And I'd say, you know, and kind of opposite to her is other secular artists like Alice Cooper. He might be the more famous because he started out as a secular artist of his own band under his own name back in like the 70s, 80s. And he became a Christian. And he is not a Christian artist, but he is an artist. He is a musician who is a Christian. Mm-hmm. He may still make rock music if he's even still making music, but he is a Christian. And he... At least that's what he claims. So I'm not going to go too hard into that, too much into that. But there is a difference between going from secular lifestyle, going from non-believing to believing, and still being in the same world and making a way in that as a light, and going from being in a Christian home, having Christian roots, and now you're so far into the world that you are the world. Mm-hmm. And there's, yeah.
A lot of that happens because, you know, you ride on your parents' faith.
Right.
You know, you think that their faith is what's going to save you and they're going to die too.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go away just like you are. We can't put our trust into somebody else's faith. It's got to be in our own. And I think a great, we talk about him all the time, but Kanye West, that's kind of what he did when he made his, you know, Jesus is King album. He did that, be like, look, this is what I was, and I was secular, and I look mm-hmm. at this, now I'm doing something Christian. And we know the result of where it ended.
Right.
But we don't see that often. We see the opposite. A lot right. of times we see the artist that starts off as a Christian then steps away from it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare to see a Christian start out secular, become a Christian. But it happens.
It does.
We can't say it doesn't happen. I think a great example would be like Justin Bieber. Whether you believe he's a Christian or not, but he's done a lot to kind of try to prove his faith.
Right.
If you've looked at kind of the more recent stuff.
Right.
But that's one example of someone starting out secular, becoming Christian. Because they exist. There's a lot of Christians that make secular music mm-hmm. because secular music isn't always bad.
Right.
We should get out of that mentality.
Yeah. Secular. Yeah.
A lot of Christians have that mentality. And a lot of Christians based it off of genre too.
Yeah, that is true. Like
they think rock music is of the devil.
Is of the devil.
You know, they think rap is of the devil.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's many Christian rock artists
who are the devil.
Well, yes, but that have made yeah. like good music.
Yeah, that made good music. And I know what you're getting at.
It's crazy because the whole like Christian music has really gone more towards the rock genre than yeah. I think any other genre. Like contemporary Christian music is so rock adjacent.
It's like, it's contemporary. I'd put it more at like, not alt rock, because even alt rock is
mm-hmm.
its own thing. Like prog rock, progressive rock is,
yeah.
I think, the probably more of.
But it's like a contemporary rock.
Yeah.
Like they have the drums, they have the electric stuff, the synth stuff. I mean, rock has obviously evolved overall, but they Christian, a lot of contemporary Christian music has that strong beat.
Yeah.
That I think that's probably the biggest connection that rock music has, is that strong beat. Mm-hmm. Is you'll see it in through all genres of rock. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't, I know we're like kind of rambling there, but we don't attribute certain genres to be of Satan, and right. Don't be like secular music is bad. I think in the case of Lucy Dacus, some of her songs, I think there's fruit and worth listening to. Mm-hmm. Again, she shows you that perspective.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about the perspective, and you can, mm-hmm. and it's good. In my evangelism class a few years ago at Southeastern, when I was doing my undergrad, we had to look up secular songs and dissect them based on Christian worldview and see how it either aligned in some ways or it differed. I mean, the song I picked was Sympathy for the Devil by Rolling Stones. And it's the same thing. It's not only with them, like Rolling Stones, but also with Lucy Dacus. Take the truths that you find in God's word, see how they stack up, and see what the worldview is like. And then how do you counter that worldview? And then how do you go about interacting with that worldview? And so there's a lot you can do with that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the direction it should go, is it should become an opportunity to interact with people who have that same worldview instead of shunning them and turning them off.
Yeah, which I think a lot of Christians, maybe not like a lot of Christians, but I think the church kind of does, right. In general.
Right.
Not any specific church.
Yeah.
So do you have anything else?
I don't. I think we've kind of talked about everything we really needed to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might be some things, you know, left to go over or to talk about, but we can't. I have said this so many times, but we can't just discuss everything.
It's true.
And so there are some things that you as the listener, when it comes to either, whether it's reading these books that we go through, mm-hmm. or getting into these artists and really figuring out who they are and what they're about, we do give you an introduction to them, and then the rest is on you.
Absolutely it is. I guess the last thing we can talk about, there's not really a controversy around the book of Ecclesiastes.
The only one is kind of what you really mentioned earlier, is who it's written by.
There's no listed author.
Yeah.
The actual like author is actually the name of the book. So the name of the book's not Ecclesiastes. In the original, in the Hebrew, the actual name of the book is basically translates to the preacher.
Yeah. And
so it's unknown. The author is unknown. Mm-hmm. A lot of these poetry books are like that. It's very similar to like the Lamentations.
Right.
Unknown, no listed author.
I can't remember.
Context clues tells us that it's probably Solomon, mm-hmm. because he identifies himself as a king of Israel.
Of David.
Yep. And he, as a son of David, he also identifies himself as being very wise.
Right.
Probably the wisest. And we know who the wisest man is, Solomon, who was the son of David. So I think those context clues helps us to that. I think the only other controversy is just the content. It's very different from any other book in the Bible.
Right.
Just the content-wise. And, I mean, some people, if they could, like, get the wrong idea from the book, because they're like, the book just tells us that we should enjoy life because nothing matters.
Nothing matters, yeah.
It's like, in the end, nothing's going to matter, so let's just enjoy what we have. Which, there's some truth in that. You should enjoy what you have. Don't, like, just, like, work for the sake of working, but find enjoyment in it. Mm-hmm. Enjoy. Don't forget the conclusion. The conclusion of Ecclesiastes is you obey God. Fear him, obey him. And that's really it.
Yeah. And specifically while you're young.
Yes.
And we know what the Bible teaches about. You know, if you're taught while you're young, then you'll remember it when you're old. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also why he mentions, you know, remembering your creator, remembering God in your youth. Because when you're old, you'll still remember him. And yeah. You'll still follow him.
Well, with that, guys, definitely tune in next time. Next week's probably going to be I don't want to be like the biggest episode of the season, but there's a lot to discuss.
It's the most well-known artist in the world.
Yeah.
I'd say at this time right now.
Absolutely. And this is an artist that's definitely grew up as a Christian. Yeah. Definitely, I would say, is not a Christian. Probably never had any faith, but has a lot of like Christian-y stuff in some of their music.
I guess.
There is. And it's funny because we're going to talk about the like some Because, you know, like some Christian music, I'd be like, it's really bad and it's not really about God. Some of this artist's music is definitely not about God, but you can twist it and be like, actually, some of this does describe a little bit of what God is like. The big brother to the Jesus is my boyfriend song.
The secular version of it.
Yeah, the secular version of the Jesus is my boyfriend. Where it's like, I didn't mean to make this song about God, but it's kind of about God.
That's too funny.
Yeah. But with that, I think we'll leave you guys till next week.
Yeah. With that, we're out of here.
See ya. Thank you for listening to the Upper Room Discourse. Join us next week for more discussions in the Upper Room.